thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
My nickname is Gloom.
And inform you in the afternoon.
The people who like licorice really like licorice.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Maserati here on a Tuesday. We're going to start with some Red Sox. They went again last night.
Yay!
In Miami. Are you going to be sarcastic about that, Maz? Are you feeling anything with your baseball team?
Well, when does the regular season start? When do these spring training games wrap up? I'm wondering, because it feels to me like they're just playing the same old crappy spring training teams.
So you're already diminishing what they've done?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. They're playing spring training teams. They haven't left the state of Florida. As far as I'm concerned, it's still Grapefruit League, for crying out loud. They might as well be playing the Minnesota Twins at Lee County Stadium or whatever they call that stupid-ass place now. Go up to Tampa, play the Rays in that place, and drive down to Miami or fly or whatever they did. Play the Marlins. It's the same minor league outfits that they've been playing throughout the spring. 4-1, they should be 5-0. I'm just having a hard time getting into it. That's all. 4-1's good. They should be 5-0. 4-1's obviously good.
Well, you better get into it for at least the next 40 minutes, pal.
Okay.
Because we're starting Red Sox.
Yeah, I'm into it. I told you, I was into it right up until the point that Hanley hit the home run last night, and then...
I got it.
Sorry. Yeah, I woke up, and it was 7-3. I said, good, boom, time for bed. Here we go. I caught up on it. I did. I just think that their competition right now is so bad. It is so freaking bad. And I don't think it's going to get better anytime soon. They could be like 9-1 by the 8-2 by the time the Yankees come in here next week. So, but even so, they're beating the teams they should beat. Give them credit for that. And they did hit the ball around a little bit last night, hit the ball out of the ballpark. So to me, all a good sign. Rack up all the wins while you can. Rack them up while you can, because if you win the division and you can overtake the Yankees, which I doubt they'll be able to do, it gives them a huge leg up. Maybe you catch a break and the Yankees get bounced.
Jay Stu, you can open the phones immediately. If you want to talk Red Sox, folks, now's your chance. I can't guarantee what else you're going to get today in terms of Sox stuff. So if you want to do it, now's your time. 617-779-0985. I wonder, Maz, this is an aside about Major League Baseball. It feels like the tanking thing in baseball is bigger and more important than ever, and there's more teams who are in that category now.
It's a problem.
Because there's so many teams that had success with it. You know, the last two World Series champions, I say, you know, the Cubs and Astros did it, and did it as well as you could possibly do it. And what's the problem with baseball is you tank, you also get money out of it. You get revenue sharing out of it. So, I mean, it's a real problem, because now it's working.
You get rewarded for it in the short term, too. That's the thing.
Right? So it's like become a preferred method to build a champion.
It's stealing.
And in the short term, you actually make money out of it because of the revenue sharing. So they got to do something about that, because it feels like, you know, I mean, every year or two, there's going to be a team that's just wretched. But it feels like now it's engineered. I mean, Miami and Tampa are purposely trying to be at the bottom of the league here.
I mean, just to give you an idea, when the Astros started their process, there was a year there, and I looked this up last week, where their opening day payroll was under $30 million. Under $30 million. So think of that. Clayton Kershaw, Miguel Cabrera, these guys are making more money than the Astros are paying their whole roster. So the Astros sucked. They were getting high picks. They were building this dynasty for the long term, and they were pocketing the money that big market teams were giving them in the process. I mean, it's just not right. It's just not right. So, like, you know, to me, baseball needs a floor. They got to put something in there, because you're going to get what you've gotten here in the first 5 days of the season, which is two absolute dog crap teams against the Red Sox who are just stepping all over them. And really, frankly, aren't even playing all that great. They're playing well. But how can you really tell? They're still getting thrown out on the bases. Until last night, they didn't hit. The manager wasn't managing his socks off in the Tampa Bay series. Last night was a layup. So you look at it and you say, what have the Red Sox, how many, up until last night, how many guys on the Red Sox really would you say were playing exceptionally well?
Well, the starting pitching.
Yeah, but again, I put an asterisk next to that one. Because who are they pitching to? So the lineup guys, I'd say Bogart's no question, right? He's been the story of the season so far. Betts has been pretty good. Devers has been pretty good. Hanley has been pretty good. But other than that, you know, it's not like that you're looking at these guys in the lineup and saying they're raking the ball all over the ballpark. To me, thus far, it has been a commentary more on the competition than it has been on the Red Sox themselves.
Okay, that being said, last night on the Baseball Reporters, you hit on something with Cora. just sort of big picture with Cora. Again, if you want to join us, 617-779-0985. What'd you talk about with Cora and the roster?
Okay, so to me, this is an interesting thing, and I hadn't heard it. Jimmy Stewart, our producer, found it. Sean McAdam was on the Hardcore Baseball podcast with Matt McCarthy, who works there at 98.5. You can catch it on our website if you want to find it there, the podcast of it. And he was asked about Bogaerts and the change in offensive philosophy more specifically. Here's what McAdam said.
Bogaerts is the kind of guy who might benefit from the managerial change more than anybody else on this roster. I think there was a disconnect for whatever reason between Bogaerts and John Farrell. I think conversely, Cora is a guy who, having come up as a shortstop, being Latino, I think there's more of a connection there. And I think also that there was at times a strained relationship between Brian Butterfield and Bogaerts. And Butterfield is renowned as a terrific infield instructor, but I think he can also be something of a drill sergeant and a taskmaster. And I think Bogaerts is the kind of guy who probably does better with a pat on the back than he does a kick in the pants.
So I heard that and I thought, and Murray and I talked about this a little bit last night. The idea that Farrell had problems communicating with some of those players and couldn't get to them is not new. Did you know that Bogaerts was one of them? Or that Butterfield and Bogaerts were having problems?
So I never heard the Butter thing. I've heard nothing but good things about Butter from the people that cover the team for, I don't know, however many years. I've heard one disparaging word about Butter, or players not getting along with Butter, or what. It's the first time I ever heard Butterfield mentioned in conjunction with not reaching young players.
So I found this to be interesting. Like, the idea that Bogaerts didn't connect with Farrell, I guess in and of itself, is not huge, because you sense that with Farrell, period, right? Like, Farrell clearly was, I mean, just listen to him talk. Like, if you're a player and you listen to his postgame or his press conference, you're like, what the hell is he talking about? I'm a ball player. Talk to me like I'm a ball player. Even so, Bogaerts strikes me as one of the most respectful, well-mannered, polite young players ever to come through there. Okay? The idea that he wouldn't, you know, that the manager couldn't get through to him surprises me a little bit. And I think tells you on some level how deeply the problem maybe really ran.
Meaning he just shouldn't have been a hard guy to reach.
Absolutely. I mean, now the sensitivity part that McAdam talked about, you know, Bogaerts is better with a pat on the back than a kick in the ass. True. We've seen this before. We saw this with Bogaerts back in 2014, whatever year it was that they moved him to third base and brought Stephen Drew back, and then Bogaerts completely went into a spin. So Bogaerts needs to be loved and reassured, no question about it. And again, I think it goes completely hand in hand with his personality, because I'd like to see him be edgier and more angry and more assertive as a player than he is. But I heard that and I said, ooh, well, that's a bad sign. So Bogaerts is number one on the list of guys that not benefit from the change in offensive philosophy, benefit from the change at manager. And then I thought about it. Who else would be on your list there? Price?
Yes.
How did Price look in the opener?
Excellent.
Good, right? Bogaerts has looked excellent. The other guy that I would sort of put on the list, I mean, and there's more than just a couple. Jackie Bradley's done jack yet. He's probably on the list. Hanley, because every manager can't reach Hanley. How's Hanley looked? Hanley looks like he's relating to Cora. Hanley's been good so far all the way around. For those that didn't stay up, he stole his second base last night in the ninth inning. In a 6-2 game, Hanley decided to take off and steal.
30-30 guy, Mass.
He's got two steals. He had one all of last year. Okay, so Hanley looks like he wants to play. Bogaerts looks like he's bought into driving the ball. He had two more hits last night. Not that either one of them was all that impressive. Price came out, and this, again, I don't know if you saw this. Price, in the first game, threw 11 what I would call off-speed pitches. 11. The rest were fastballs and cutters. Like, two curveballs and 9 changeups or something. That's it. Price is coming after guys still. At least more so than he was. And I just look at it and said, what if the Red Sox were right? What if John Henry and Dave Dombrowski and Tom Werner said, if we change managers, we actually might get through to some of these guys and we'll get more out of them. We'll be a better team. What if they were right?
I can't believe you're allowing for that. I can't believe you, of all people, are allowing for that after 5 games against minor league competition.
I did not say I allowed for it. I just said, what if? I'm trying to initiate conversation.
This doesn't sound like you.
I'm trying to initiate conversation.
This doesn't sound like you. Sox might have been right.
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt for five games.
Okay. So, but you think there might be something to that. I mean, I think there's absolutely something to that. And now,
the question is how much of a difference it makes in the long term.
Yes, of course. You were going to start off well because of the competition, and you come out of camp, and it should all be unicorns and show ponies. We're not going to know about the whole thing until they really hit some adversity, and then we'll really know. So I think this was predictable, but I think what you're seeing is real. I think they hated Farrell, and they're glad that he's gone, and that is going to help some of these guys, certainly in the short term.
I mean, Bogaerts, again, is the easy one, and McAdam touched on all the key points, right? Bogaerts is an island kid. I mean, how many ball players come from, you know, Aruba, Curacao, those ABC islands, they call them, I think, right? How many ball players come from there? Not many. So Cora is a Puerto Rican native. He's an island guy. He's a Caribbean guy. He's a middle infielder on top of it. He's played in Boston. He understands the pressure of playing in Boston. The intensity of it is really what we should say. I don't know how much pressure there is anymore, but relative to Tampa and some other places, there's more intensity. Okay, so there, if there's some sort of connect there that's tapped in, because Bogaerts has been a revelation in these first five games. I don't know if it's going to keep up, and I doubt it will, because his history suggests he's a first-half player, and that's it. And they're playing dog food in these first five, six games. Really, first nine when Tampa comes in here next week. They are playing dog food. But he does not look like the same player.
Okay, we're going to start Red Sox. Again, I get in early. I can't guarantee what we're going to have later on in the show. Probably won't be Red Sox. So if you want to talk baseball, now is your chance. It's 617-779-0985. Right to you after this.
This is Felger and Mazz. On 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5. The Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Good count, 3-1, and he strokes this one high and deep to left, racing back Smith, turning around, she's gone. He's still at it. Xander Bogaerts puts the Red Sox on the scoreboard. I should say he is locked in.
Hey, guys, just wanted to try to make two quick points here, and just about the lack of runs that this team has been generating, the fact that we're winning by one run. Wasn't it Murray back when they landed Stanton that I thought this team's going to dance around? Ooh, we win by 1-2. Meanwhile, the Yankees are winning by 2, 3, 4 runs, who they've been winning by at least 2.
Okay, so let me just stop you. Are you concerned about the lack of offense, Mass?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, in the long term, yes. Absolutely, I am. I question whether J.D. Martinez is going to be the kind of thunder they really need in the middle of the lineup. So, yes. Now, look, are they going to be above average? Of course. Yeah, they're going to be above average, and I mean that offensively in terms of run production. But when they face a good team that's balanced, like a really good team, a Houston, a Yankees, even Cleveland, and they're going to get neutralized a little bit, do they have that guy that can still get them 3 runs with one swing? I don't know.
Speaking of J.D. Martinez, he sits last night. Tonight he's playing in the outfield for Mookie Betts. So now we're 5 games in, and as Jimmy Stewart just pointed out off the air, he's played more games in the outfield than a designated hitter. He has subbed in for all 3 of the outfield positions. How do you feel about that?
So to me, Martinez should be the DH.
And they're in Miami, obviously, so you don't have that option.
Right, so the real revelation was in Tampa, because he played 2 games out there in that series. And so you look at that and say, what's that about? Like early on. So now, again, I think Cora's got this blueprint of how they're going to do it. But what makes it unusual, fine, you want to give everybody a day off here in the early part of the year. They're off tomorrow. They're off again on Friday. I mean, they're playing 1 game in the next 3 days. So now Betts is going to play once until Saturday. Like, you know, Martinez is going to play twice until Saturday. It just, to me, your best hitters, your 3-4 guys in the lineup, you shouldn't mess with those. And Betts to me should be in the lineup every day too.
Forrest in Pittsfield on Bogaerts. Hi, Forrest.
Hey, guys. Hey, Mazz, when you talk about Bogaerts and Farrell, last year something came up that I still remember, and I think it was late August, well after he had been hit on the hand, you know, around the All-Star game, and you could see that he just wasn't the same guy. And then Farrell was asked after a game about Bogaerts' hand, and he was very dismissive of him, just saying, oh, it's just something he's going to have to play through. And it just sounded like he was dismissive of Bogaerts. And also, at the time, I said, why can't he go on the DL for a week and get well? We got the playoffs to worry about and all of September to worry about. What do you think?
So, look, it could have been a source of the tension or friction between the two. And again, I'm going by what Sean McAdam said on this podcast, that there was a disconnect there between Bogaerts and John Farrell. And if Cora can get through to him and make him a happier, more productive player, great. Great. I also question, though, how much do you want to invest in just Bogaerts? Right? Like, and I'm not saying Cora was hired just for Bogaerts, because I don't think it's quite that simple. But I think Cora was hired for a collection of these younger players, Bogaerts chief among them. You've got Bogaerts this year and next, and then you have to make a decision. So are they going to pay him or not? Like, and they need to see what his ceiling is first. I get that. But I also think, like, did you pick a manager just for a year or two? I don't know. I mean, I know you can't necessarily hire one for 10 years, but what was the real impetus for Cora and for how long? I wonder about that.
Well, what's the how long part? I don't get that.
Because what if you looked at Cora saying, well, you know, we really only need to get a couple of years out of him, and then we'll worry about the next manager after that? Or did they go into it saying, no?
Well, I think he's young enough as a rookie manager. No, they think it's it for the long haul. I think that's how you would. No, the guy, the short-termer is Jim Leland. Well, you come in here for a short period of time, older guy, kick him in the ass, Bill Parcells, and then he's gone. That's not Cora. Cora is the guy for the next decade, they hope.
Okay, but again, what if these young guys that allegedly Cora is going to get through to leave?
Well, if they're awesome, maybe they won't.
We'll see. I just think Bogaerts is, you know, look, I'm looking way down the road, but Bogaerts is going to be a tough sign. That's going to be a hard one.
Dan in Manchester, go ahead. What do you got?
Hi, just a quick thought on the championship aspirations that all of us hope that they have. This team's got two or three more years, and then for the next two or three years, we lose three players a year. And I work about...
Okay, get him at the phone.
It's 1 or 2 years, not three.
Okay, why is it 1 or 2 years?
Because Chris Sale's up soon, Bogaerts is up soon, Kimbrel's up at the end of the year.
So you're not going to lose them all.
Okay, you're not going to sign them all?
No, you're going to lose some.
And who do you got coming in the system?
So you sign someone else. I mean, you think the window's closed in a couple of years?
I went into this when they got Sale, I thought it was a 3-year window. This is year two. So, yep, I do. I think
And then what happens year three? They got to retool the whole thing?
Maybe. Look, I'm telling you, I don't see where necessarily they are set up to make a 5-year run year. This is where I think there's a big difference between them and the Yankees. Like, if you look at Stanton and Judge and Sanchez, that's their core pretty much for the next 5 years. Pretty much. And I look at the Red Sox and say, Bogaerts has got 1 year left after this one, so they may be put in a spot where they got to make a call on Bogaerts this offseason. Sale is up after next year. Kimbrel's up this year. Porcello's coming up. Now, Price is an opt-out, and maybe he doesn't opt out. But a lot of the guys that this team is built around are going to be up in the next 18 months. Like, I think that it's this year and next, and all of a sudden you're looking at some significant changes.
Wally in Fall River, hi.
Yeah, Mike and Tony, we're playing a lot of weak teams now, especially the Marlins and the Tampa. We're going to have to wait and see what happens with this pitching when we start facing a lot better lineups. But as far as resting people, I can't see that now. I mean, you got to have Hanley, J.D., Bogey, and Betts in that lineup every day. I mean, you got about, 5-6 days off in April. But as far as Bogaerts, he was hurt last year. You get 25 and 80 out of him, I'm happy.
Okay, well, let's see.
Yeah, but what was his excuse the year before?
I was going to say, he was hurt, but he's also, look at his first half, second half splits his whole career, right? And pretty much every year?
Yes, the only year he pretty much went wire to wire, you know, hitting 300 every month was 2015. And I thought he's turned a corner. Like, I think he had 12 home runs that year. And then the next year, he had 21, but his batting average dropped precipitously in the second half. Last year, average and power went down. So, like, to me, it looks like Bogaerts can't sync it all up. And so I worry about him in the second half. You want to talk about resting guys, rest Bogaerts. He clearly can't play 157 games. They've run him into the ground in part, even if there was an injury. How do you explain the year before? The guy to rest is Bogaerts. If you want to do that and play Holt at second and Nunez at short or whatever, figure that out.
I find it all aggravating. Not that I'm losing sleep over it or anything, but you sign a guy. What did J.D. Martinez, what is he making again? 24
22 million?
$22 million. $22 million a year. And he sits on day five. You've got MVP candidate Mookie Betts, who has to sit today because Martinez now needs his chance in the outfield. I know it's a National League park, but they did this in Tampa, too, because Benintendi sat, who Jimmy Stewart thinks is an MVP candidate. So you got two corner outfielders who various people think are MVP candidates who are sitting because you promised outfield time to the free agent who should be DHing, but he doesn't want to DH. And then yesterday he doesn't even play. Like, all of that is in another, you know,
it's annoying.
Another era we would blow up into a big deal. But it just, it doesn't feel, I don't feel right sitting any of those corner outfielders. And I sure as hell don't feel right sitting the $22 million a year player on day five.
You shouldn't sit guys who hit in the middle of your lineup. You shouldn't. The whole point is, like, what are you know, the whole point is to have the meat of your lineup, the core of your team there. And then if you want to change the pieces around it from time to time, fine. But you shouldn't be changing the core. To me, Hanley should play every day at first base. Martinez should DH every day. Betts should be in right field every day. And Benintendi and Bogarts, for the most part, should be in the lineup every day. Again, Bogarts I would watch. And for that matter, Benintendi too. Give him a blow where you can. But you're only 5 days in. And they got two off days coming up. These guys shouldn't be resting now.
Pete in Delaware, go.
Hey, guys. You know, what bothers me already is we're placating the players already. And the J.D. Martinez, we signed this guy. He didn't even have any other suitors. And now we're caught up where he's going to, like Matt said, he should be DH'd. So we're hurting our team to placate a guy who had no other suitors, and we paid him a lot of money. It drives me crazy. Why are the Red Sox placating players? They're the Boston Red Sox. They can spend money and get players. I don't understand it.
So I'm with you. It's a source of minor frustration. It's a wrong time to be doing it because it's Miami and he can't DH anyway. So that wasn't going to happen here. Someone was going to have to sit, which we get. But they did it in Tampa. And you know when they come back, they're going to be doing the same thing.
They did it twice in Tampa.
So they're going to keep doing this in the early season until it shakes out. And it just doesn't seem to fit. We can continue with your Red Sox thoughts. It's 617-779-0985. Also the latest on Gronkowski and the Patriots coming up after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like anti-competitive. Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Belichick is a little bit frustrated because he has cited things to people close to him as nuanced as an Instagram post that Gronkowski posted about Danny Amendola signing with the Miami Dolphins, under which he said, be free, be happy.
I don't like Gronk's Instagram posts. The one he sent to Danny I hate the most. The one that said, be free and be happy. You and Tom don't like how I run this team? Then why don't you and that diva pick up and leave? Be free. And be happy. Be free and happy now.
Wow, Murray, wow.
You want more? You're mad because I sent Butler to the bench? Well, Tom, I think your wife, Giselle's a wench. Be free. Be happy. You say you want to be a Hollywood star? Then why you always hanging at the bar, Gronk? Be free. Be happy. I could sing like him all day.
Is that
it's
how you,
fun.
Are you actually beatboxing to his sinus problems, yeah. basically?
Sorry.
Poor guy. All right, so there is some latest reporting on Gronkowski. Nothing earth-shattering. Rappaport just sort of echoed what Jeff Daniels had over the weekend on ESPN. I thought Tom Kern wrote something interesting as well on NBC Sports Boston. Kern's been all over the thing, and, you know, Kern continues to say not 100% that Brady will be back. It's not 100%. I don't know what percent he puts on it. I'm not telling you he's saying it's, you know, 50-50, but Tom continues to say it's not 1,000% locked in with Brady, and, you know, that continues to stand out, because Kern's not the guy to, you know, just sling it around like us. So that continues to catch my eye. You know, there's really been no movement on the story, which I think is a story in and of itself.
So do you think Brady taking that stance is as simple as Guerrero?
No, I think it's a whole picture of, you know, just get off my back.
What a dink.
He's working on the coup.
To Mr. Happy over there, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'd be one of the great dink moves of all time. King Richard Brady.
Okay, so we'll give you more details here coming up on all that stuff. Let's continue with your calls here. People want to talk some socks. Jay in the car on J.D. Martinez. Go ahead, Jay.
All right. I don't know what position J.D. Martinez even played. What did he play during his career?
He was right fielder mostly, right?
Yeah, and left, yeah.
All right, so...
I think he's played some... Go ahead.
Would he be opposed... you guys wouldn't know, but would he be opposed to playing first and him and Manley alternating days off by DH and first?
Okay, you want them both in the lineup.
Yeah, you do. You want them both in the lineup. But he's saying to flip him one DH, one first base. And, like, you know, honestly, I would rather have Hanley. I don't know what kind of defensive first baseman J.D. Martinez is, but based on how Hanley's engagement level seems to improve when he's at first base, I want him at first base.
Martinez wants to play outfield, and I think they promised him that. I think it's pretty clear they've promised him that because they're using him as an outfielder. He's played more outfield than designated hitter. So that was the promise to the player from the team, and now they're trying to live up to it, even though it doesn't really quite fit. And it bugs me to no end. Again, if this sort of bugged me, if we were in a different era, this would bug me.
So,
we don't get all hot and bothered with the Red Sox like we used to, is what I'm trying to say, but Bradley should be the one sitting. It shouldn't be Betts or Benintendi.
No, Bradley should absolutely sit.
Bradley should be the one that's out, not those corner guys.
And I was just checking his log. J.D. Martinez has never played first base in the big leagues. I thought he had. He has not.
So the fact that they keep Bradley in there and take away, you know, Betts is out tonight and Bradley's in. Meh. Like, I don't know how you feel good about
look,
that.
Look, I'm shocked Jackie Bradley's even still here. I honestly, look, he's a terrific outfielder. I happen to think center field defense can be a little overrated. A little. You won one with Johnny Damon and Jacoby Ellsbury playing center field, and neither one of them were great. Okay, they were pretty good. You know, and even Damon at the end, Damon wasn't even pretty good anymore. He was okay. Like, as long as you catch the ones that are hit to you, you're all right.
Mike in Boston, go.
You guys kind of just touched on what I was going to say, but I think Bradley should be the one that's phased out, and I'm surprised he's here, too. I think Benintendi or Betts could play center field just as well. And Martinez, if he really wants to play the outfield.
So I don't think that Benintendi and Betts would play center field as well as Bradley. I'm not going that far. Bradley's elite. He's superior out there. He's terrific.
He'd play it well enough, though.
But the calculus is, how much do you lose in the field versus the bat? And I'll take, if Bradley's a 98 on a scale of 100 and Betts is a 92, I think you're going to make up those 6 percentage points offensively.
No question.
And you're going to net out better.
Yeah, the reality is the Red Sox have 3 center fielders playing in their outfield. That's why their outfield defense is so good. But frankly, Benintendi's wasted at Fenway. I mean, any clown can play left field at Fenway Park. So you'd be better off having one of them play in center and putting a bat in left, which is historically what they have done.
We've got Charlie in Fall River on the Red Sox. Hi, Charlie.
Michael, let me ask you a question. What's the most compelling story in Boston right now, the Bruins or the Red Sox?
So to me, it's the Bruins.
Depending on where they are in the season, right? I mean, they're playing the worst team in baseball tonight, the Red Sox. The game means absolutely nothing. It's going to be 8-1 in the fourth inning when the Bruins game starts. And I got to watch the Bruins on Nesson Plus, a network that they cannot get right. It's a bleep show every time they try to do this. Now we're going to throw the fact that the game is on the road. So it's going to make it even worse. Their regular broadcast on Nesson 1, the original Nesson, sucks on the road compared to at home. It's I don't know why they're going to put the Red Sox on the Nesson 1.
Can I tell you
and then
why?
After the game, you got to switch from that channel to go back to Nesson 1 to watch the post game of the Bruins. Why don't they just put the Red Sox on Nesson 2, run the whole thing there, put the Bruins on Nesson 1, and run the whole thing on that channel? Why do I have to keep switching around?
Okay,
what a bleep show this network is.
Okay, does it really screw up when it's on Nesson Plus?
Absolutely. They can't get it right. They can't get the thing started right.
Really?
You lose the pregame. The sound is absolutely horrendous. The puck is blurry on Nesson 2.
Is
it? As opposed to Nesson 1. It's a bleep show.
All right.
And it's for a game that means absolutely nothing with the Red Sox.
I'm going to pay attention. Is it really worse quality on Nesson 2?
I don't know.
Nesson Plus?
The last game that they had on Nesson Plus had audio issues, and it was like standard definition television all over again.
Well, you can't have standard def in hockey anymore. That ship has sailed, man. You can't do that. You can't ask people to watch hockey in standard def anymore.
No, no. There's been no sport that has benefited from high def more.
Not even close.
Yeah. I mean, it's made a world of difference. But you know the reason they do it this way, because the Red Sox own 80% of NESN.
And it's not just that. I mean, it is that. And the Bruins own 20. So, I mean, but and this is something I grapple with as a talk show host. How much Bruins to talk? I mean, how much Red Sox to talk? Because they don't light the lamp like they used to. Like, right. we all acknowledge that. It's not like it used to be. And it's not, it doesn't run through the veins, and it doesn't get people, you know, fired up like it used to. It just does not. Fact. But their ratings are still better. Like, the Bruins and Celtics would kill for the Red Sox TV ratings. The Red Sox last night did a 5.5. Up against the national championship game against the worst team in baseball. So on nothing night, they did a 5.5. When the Celtics and Bruins do 5.5s, they do cartwheels naked down the street. You know, they average 3s and 4s. And yes, the Red Sox attendance is down 6%, Sam Kennedy said. They're still going to draw 2.5 bleeping million. There's still going to be 30 plus thousand in that stadium every single day. So they're still really popular. So what do you like? So how do you handle that on a talk show? Like, how much time do you give them?
Okay, so of that 5.5 that the Red Sox are drawing on TV, what percentage of those people are our target audience?
So that's an excellent question. Of that 5.5, how many are actually passed out with their teeth on the table next to them on the Lazy Boy? Right. So what's
and their pants pulled up to their breasts?
Right. What's the quality of that demo when it's basically between nap time and Jell-O time, and your teeth are on the table next to you in the Lazy Boy?
Bingo. Yeah, and I told you, to me, the Bruins have been the best story in town for about 4 months. Now, and I say best as in most positive. I know that's unusual for us here on the Felger and Mazz Show, because the Patriots obviously factored in there. But the Bruins right now are the best product in town. The best product in town. They're great to watch. They overachieve. They play their asses off. Like, everything you would want in a team right now, the Bruins are giving it to you. Every single thing.
Okay, but we got everything on the board. So we're going to talk about the J.D. Martinez and the Red Sox stuff. We'll get to more Gronkowski throughout the course of the day. We have some hot, blazing Celtics material for you. Some blazing Celtic stuff.
Scorching.
And it's coming from Jimmy in Brighton, which when you know it's from James in Brighton, you know you need to pay attention. So we'll give that to you next. Don't go anywhere.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Mazz. You're listening to Felger and Mazz.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
There is no greater negative that can happen to LeBron James this year than losing to Kyrie Irving.
Oh,
this is why I said Cleveland's coming out of the East. LeBron James cannot lose to Kyrie Irving this year. I ain't talking about next year when Gordon Hayward comes.
I'm not talking
about when we look at the future of Boston. This year, without Gordon Hayward, if the Boston Celtics, and I'm not, let me tell you something right now. This is how bad this is. LeBron would lose to somebody else. Lose to the Wizards in the first round.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah.
Lose to Toronto. It wouldn't be as bad. If LeBron James loses to Kyrie Irving, he won't live that down. He won't live that down. And I don't.
Are they going to win or lose?
They are not losing to Boston.
See, Molly.
They are not losing to Boston. LeBron, I believe of all the years that LeBron James has been in this league, this is the closest we will ever see to him being Jordan-esque in a series against Boston and Kyrie Irving.
Okay.
Because, he has to right now. I'm trying to tell you.
Do you agree with Stephen A. Smith there on ESPN yesterday?
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. I think for LeBron now, we're talking about LeBron's perspective. He does not want to lose to Kyrie. It's a great point. He does not want to lose to Kyrie Irving.
And wouldn't you say that Kyrie Irving has a cavalier in his pants to beat LeBron?
Oh, no question. It's the number one reason why that matchup would be so great is those two just not wanting to lose to one another. That would be awesome. But you're going to get LeBron, as you know, Bird used to say decades ago, both barrels. You're getting both. You're getting everything LeBron can throw at you in that series.
You're going
to
get a hint to what he was just yelling about there, Stephen A. Smith, about this with these final five games. Because if the Cavs finish 5-0 to finish the season, they're actually going to finish a game better than they did with Kyrie last year. So if they push these last five games.
Is that true?
Yeah. I saw that this morning. They'll finish a game better than they did with Kyrie Irving last season. So if they go 5-0 down the stretch here, you'll know that LeBron's flicked the switch and he's got something to prove and he's got the Kyrie bug up his keister.
Well, so where are we? Well, he does. I don't think you can deny that. But where are we, Murray? Because I've written the Cavs off. I wrote them off a month ago.
Yeah, you were premature on that. No,
well, you go back and forth based on the day. Where are you today?
No, they can be had. They can be had. They're vulnerable. The East stinks. If Kyrie comes back, the Celtics are going to be the team that comes out of the East.
I told you guys this. I told
Don't
you.
Say you guys.
I haven't changed my mind.
He's the one that said that they were done.
I haven't changed my mind.
The
Cavs are toast.
No, they're not.
Cavs are toast, baby.
Do you realize LeBron has played in every game this year?
Yes.
And his minutes are ridiculous.
Yes. He's played in every single one. Every one. Like, and I'm not saying he's quote-unquote been there for everyone, because he probably took some nights off. But the mere fact that he's going to play 82 should tell you plenty.
What's more important for the Celtics? Finishing with the first seed and having home court throughout the playoffs? Or finishing whatever seed you need to avoid Cleveland until the conference finals?
Avoid Cleveland.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because there is a little dance here. The Celtics are two games behind Toronto for the one seed. Toronto plays Cleveland tonight. And then you're at Toronto tomorrow. So by the time you get through tomorrow night's games, you could be first in the East. It's within your grasp. If you're the one and Cavs are the four, then you pay the Cavs in the second round. If you're the two and they're the four, you play them in the conference finals. You get it? They're brackets. They don't reseed.
Of course.
So you can sort of, you can help map out your matchup. Kyrie Irving, Marcus Smart are not supposed to come back till the end of the first round at the earliest. And if you get Cleveland in the second, those guys should be back. But are they 100%? Have they worked the kinks out? Have they knocked the rust off? Have they gotten back in condition? Wouldn't you like to have Kyrie and Marcus Smart have a warm-up series before you get to LeBron James in the East Finals?
Yes.
Yeah, I've come around on that. But you know what? It's moot. And they proved this. Brad Stevens proved this 3 years ago, that first year with IT. They're going to go for this one seed. Remember, they would have been better off if they finished the last seed. They would end up having Atlanta that first playoff season with Brad, and they ended up pushing for it. They got Cleveland that first round and got swept. They're going to go for it. So I still think they're going to try to get this number one seed.
Yeah, I just
the first year they got swept by Cleveland, they were the 8 seed.
No, they were the 7.
Oh, you're saying they could have been the 8
could
and
have been
avoided
the 8
Cleveland.
And played Atlanta in the first round.
I get it.
And people were kind of hoping. I know I was one of them. Like, tank down the stretch here. Look, you can get Atlanta. That would be a better matchup for you.
Right.
They didn't. They went for it. They ended up the 7. They played Cleveland as the 2, and they got swept that first round.
I'm not worried about them finishing first and going for it, because I don't think they're going to get there. I just think the math doesn't work.
Well, Toronto's going to lose tonight.
I'll tell you what, I might be wrong, Murray.
Toronto's in Cleveland?
Doesn't matter where. That could be anywhere. Could put it on Mars. They're going to lose to Cleveland. They can't get over that hump. A gutless operation.
Murray hates the Raptors.
Oh, God. What a fraud team they are.
I told you about them, too. They're gutless. That team has no marbles. None. That's a marble-less team. Ballless. They are ballless.
Speaking of ballless, how about my Milwaukee Bucks? So the Celts are going to go into Milwaukee tonight with no point guards.
Yeah, it's been confirmed. They've all been ruled out.
None. So no Kyrie, no Marcus Smart, no Rozier, and is Larkin also out?
Yeah, Larkin's got the flu. He didn't even travel with the team. The one that they were waiting on was Rozier. They're holding him out because of the ankle.
So who does, who runs the point?
Good
Horford,
question.
Horford, Tatum.
Horford's
not bringing the ball up the floor.
Well, you know what? He might. They do that
every play? They do that from time to time, but please.
No, no. They will.
Jalen.
They'll probably rotate it. My guess is it'll be Tatum. Tatum. You'll see a lot of Tatum with the ball tonight. That's why. But if you put the ball in Brown's hand, forget it. You're never going to get over half court if they put any pressure on him.
The Bucks will still lose. And you feel that coming in my bones. They'll still lose. Celts have no one to handle the ball, and they'll win. They'll walk into Milwaukee and win this game.
Give it to Tatum.
What's more important, home court throughout the playoffs or avoiding Cleveland until the conference finals, which is something you can help engineer here by trying to win or trying to lose and being the one or the two based on whether Cavaliers are the three or the four. Right now the Cavs are a half game up on Philly, who's won 10 bleeping straight games. And Embiid's been out, right?
Yeah, he's been out for the last couple anyway. Yeah, he got popped in the face.
So, that's another team. You'll get Philly, which ain't no bargain, but I'm sorry. You should beat Philly at this point. Philly's not. They're coming, but they're not there. I mean, this whole thing I've been talking about the last couple days, kids don't win.
That whole team is kids.
So, I mean,
other than J.J. Redick.
So if that holds true, they're not ready. They're not ready.
I'm telling you, Embiid's a bad matchup for them.
Okay, but he's a bad matchup for everybody. Who has centers?
Well, that's true.
Okay, so they're too young. And if I'm going to throw shade on Tatum and Brown in the playoffs because they're young, then I have to throw shade on the entire Sixers. At least I'm consistent, Maz.
Hope you're rolling on it, Celtics. You just did it again. Too young. Too young.
Oh, good. I like it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, too young.
Too young. All right. I haven't even gotten to this yet. The blazing hot Celtics rumor from Jimmy in Brighton, which has been echoed by national basketball voices across the country.
This take is so, and this piece of info is so hot. If it were re-entering from space, it would burn up coming through the atmosphere.
And the Tahitians would be diving for cover if this were coming in from near Earth orbit.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.